Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of February 24th, 2020. We begin our reading today with an article from the Ford County Chronicle entitled, Storefront Remodeling Gets Boost from City Grant, Gibson City. A business's new location will get a boost for a planned storefront remodeling from the city's Business Facade Grant Program. On Monday night, members of the Gibson City Council unanimously approved the maximum of $5,000 in matching fund for an exterior upgrade to the building at 115 East 8th Street, recently purchased by Craig Young to house his electrical contracting business. The site formerly housed Jim Miller's auto repair business and is located to the east of City Hall. Young, 33, said he has been operating CY Electric from his home since moving to town in 2016. He has about 12 years in the trade, however. Young's brother is a general contractor and will assist in the renovation. The pair recently completed the building upgrades to Sid and Sadie's boutique at 102 North Sangamon Avenue in Gibson City. Young said the estimate for all the work is $11,350. Grant program is a matching funds arrangement, so Young will be paying for more than half the total cost. Alderman and Finance Committee Chairman Scott Davis said Young will have to wait until the city's new fiscal year begins May 1st to receive any repayments for expenditures he submits. The grant's fund balance has been spent for the current fiscal year. Also at the meeting, the first ordinance of 2020 will give legal status to a limited parking arrangement near two downtown pharmacies that was approved at the council's February 10th meeting. The ordinance was prepared by City Attorney Mark Miller. The ordinance legally created two 15-minute limited spaces, one in front of the medicine shop at 104 North Sangamon Avenue and the other in front of Scott's Family Pharmacy at 220 North Sangamon Avenue. Council members approved amending the prepared ordinance to say that the parking limit will apply from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. on weekdays only. Mayor Dan Dickey is authorized to select which spaces to which the short-term parking will apply. Staying parked longer than 15 minutes could earn a motorist a $50 fine. Alderman Dennis Fisher asked how the limit will be enforced. Dickey said he has talked with the business owners to ask for their cooperation and also hopes people will not abuse the spots that were created especially for the safety and convenience of seniors or other pharmacy customers with mobility issues. In other business, Alderman Susie Tongate reported at a recent pool board committee meeting. She said Hannah Cliff will again be the head lifeguard. Treasurer Scott Scholl's report indicated a balance of nearly $31,900 in the Building Gibson City Pool account. The city will not hear until possibly late June or July on the status of its grant application for a new pool. During approval of bills, City Superintendent Randy Stouffer said billing overcharges have been reported to area disposal and any payment continues to be withheld. He said that while the company has not disputed the city's claim, it has not issued a refund. Now from the front page of the Ford County Record, vaping awareness push nets over $900. Paxton. The recent high school boys game between Watsika and Paxton Buckley Lota wasn't just about basketball. Months in the making, the night's theme, Vaping Awareness Night, was part of an effort to call attention to the potential dangers of a trend that's only gotten more popular among students, PBL Principal Travis Dooley said. We've seen an uptake in the number of students vaping, he said. There are obvious health concerns, especially after hearing all of those deaths related to vaping, so we wanted to try and push the message and get the information out there. The plan was to have the American Heart Association representatives give presentations all day at the high school and junior high, but because schools were closed, they've been rescheduled for February 27th. PBL hosted fundraisers and student council members read facts related to the vaping periodically throughout the game. Between the two schools, he said, over $900 was raised for the American Heart Association's vaping education campaign. Also on the front page, two arrested after attempting to fill fake prescription. two individuals were arrested attempting to fill a fake prescription. According to police reports, Isaac B. Medler, 18, of Rantoul, took the fake prescription to Hudson Drugstore at the 100 block of North Market Street. This was reported to police at 10 a.m. February 21st. Police responded to the drugstore at 1:13 p.m. when Medler was to pick up the prescription. Medler was questioned, and he told police someone was going to pay him $50 to pick it up. The other person fled on foot. Later, Ricardo E. Ramirez, 20, of Ludlow, was caught as the person Medler said would pay him for the prescription. Both were charged with attempted unlawful acquisition of a controlled substance. Both were charged with possession of cannabis and possession of drug paraphernalia. In school news from Paxton, PBL FFA members attend 212-degree conference. Paxton. Paxton Buckley Lota FFA chapter members Kirsten Lyons, Macy Jensen, Alexis Putnam, Jasmine Kurland, and Hope Watts attended the annual 212-degree conference February 7th and 8th in Decatur. The two-day event is focused on student development and helps FFA members become aware of all aspects of personal growth. Students attended sessions on mental, emotional, physical, and social growth and leave the experience with a personal plan for self-improvement. Energy Transfer sponsors the event. 212 degrees, the temperature at which water boils, focuses on taking students with the boiling point of personal leadership. At 211 degrees, water is extremely hot, but just one more degree gets it to the next level. FFA seeks to make a positive difference in the lives of students by developing their potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agricultural education. Now a story with statewide implications. Sheriffs, new state policy allows convicted felons to evade federal authorities. Kankakee. Illinois sheriffs are raising alarms that a recent policy change by the Illinois Department of Corrections, IDOC, allows dangerous felons to be released back into Illinois communities, according to a news release. This is occurring despite valid requests by federal immigration authorities to transfer the convicted felons to a designated holding facility while the individual's immigration case is reviewed and adjudicated. In 2019, 223 individuals were transferred to the Jerome Combs Detention Center in Kankakee after serving time at an IDOC facility for their felony convictions. This occurred via a notification from IDOC at the request of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. Starting in January 2020, IDOC stopped notifying federal authorities and instead allowed these individuals to be released immediately from the correctional facility into Illinois communities where they had been serving their sentence. The public needs to know that this policy shift results in convicted felons being released back into our counties and neighborhoods without notice, despite federal authorities asking that they be transferred to another facility in the judicial system, said Sheriff Mike Downey of Kankakee County. More troubling to the sheriffs and law enforcement is that there is no notice or warning given to a local or federal authorities when the individuals are released. The state of Illinois is helping convicted felons get a head start on evading federal authorities who simply want to do their job, said Christian County Sheriff Bruce Kettlecamp. The lack of coordination is raising the stakes that a dangerous or violent altercation will occur in our communities between a recently released felon who knows that immigration authorities are looking for them and any law enforcement officer. This policy undermines the rule of law, endangers our local communities, and puts the lives of our first responders at risk. A review of the transfers completed in 2019 by the Kankakee Sheriff's Office found that individuals requested by ICE and transferred to the correctional facility had been convicted of the following crimes in Illinois. 36 individuals were found guilty of sexual offenses against minors, including crimes against individuals as young as 5 years old. In 11 individuals were found guilty of murder, attempted murder, or intent to kill or injure. 19 individuals were found guilty of predatory criminal sexual assault. 33 individuals were found guilty of a criminal offense involving a weapon. 50 individuals were found guilty of drug offenses involving a substance other than cannabis, and 55 individuals were found guilty of felony-level driving traffic offenses, including aggravated DUI, having a fourth DUI, or a DUI resulting in death. The Illinois Sheriff's Association urges Governor Pritzker to reconsider the policy and enable IDOC to coordinate with its partner in law enforcement and criminal justice. Also of statewide interest, education funding returns to the forefront. And this is by Jerry Nowicki of the Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. Education funding is once again top of the mind at the Capitol, with a key cog of Governor J.B. Pritzker's fiscal year 2021 budget proposal addressing the matter already facing pushback. At issue is the state's three-year-old K-12 education funding system, known as the evidence-based model. For the fourth straight budget year, lawmakers are discussing how many hundreds of millions of dollars in additional funding that formula will receive as compared to a year ago. Governor J.B. Pritzker laid out two scenarios for K-12 funding in his Wednesday budget address, which only details his priorities ahead of months of negotiations in the General Assembly. The first adds the full statutory target of $350 million in new funding to the formula next fiscal year, which begins July 1st. The second would add $200 million in new funding. Under the tentative proposal, which of the scenarios plays out would depend on whether voters approve a constitutional amendment in the November general election to scrap Illinois' 4.95% flat income tax and allow the state to charge higher rates on higher levels of income. If the amendment passes, essentially raising the tax burden on earners making more than $250,000 a year, while maintaining or lowering it modestly for all others, government forecasters predict the state would have an extra $1.4 billion to spend on the fiscal year, allowing for an additional $150 million for K-12 funding. The graduated tax-free budget holds $40 million in reserve for categorical payments to school districts for programs such as special education and transportation on the contingency of the graduated tax passing. Republicans lampoon the budget deal proposal as one that holds added investment in education hostage as a marketing ploy for Pritzker's graduated tax. This bullying tactic to hold funding to our schools hostage and our students in order to get his way not only is irresponsible, but represents a false choice, Representative Avery Bourne, a Republican of Raymond and assistant minority leader in the House, said in a news conference Tuesday. Democrats, including two of the lead architects of the evidence-based funding model, were lukewarm on the idea as well, but they acknowledged it's the first step in a long process of budgetary negotiations. State Senator Andy Menar, a Democrat of Bunker Hill, led the Senate Democrats in negotiations for the evidence-based formula's passage in 2017. On Thursday, he said in an interview he would support the full funding of the $350 million regardless of the graduated tax passage. It's day one of the budget-making process, and there's multiple ways to achieve what I think most people want to achieve, which is at the end of fiscal year 21, which runs July 1st, 2020 to July 30th, 2021, we will have put a minimum of $350 million more into the evidence-based formula, he said. The $350 million number is defined as a target in statute, with the goal of bringing all districts to 90% of funding adequacy by 2027. Another goal is to drive down local property taxes by reducing the need for school boards to raise their property tax levies each year in order to meet spending needs. The formula determines the level of funding need for each district individually through an adequacy target determined by several variables tied to student performance. It separates districts into four tiers, one being the least funded and four being the most, and distributes 99% of the new funding to the lowest two tiers with the majority going to Tier 1. But the statute also has a secondary formula that kicks in if the full $350 million number is not met. The secondary formula directs an even larger share of the new funding to Tier 1 districts. Republicans questioned whether a budget appropriating $350 million but holding $150 million of that in reserve would affect which formula kicks in. And Menar said that critical question would have to be addressed in budget negotiations. Menar and Representative Will Davis, a Homewood Democrat and House sponsor of the evidence-based formula when it passed, argued this week that for all districts to meet adequacy in the law's original 10-year target window, the state should be contributing hundreds of millions more on top of the $350 million. I believe that if education is truly a priority, not only can we allocate the $350 million that the governor is referring to, but, believe it or not, I think we can do better. If we prioritize it, we can put as much as $500 million new dollars in kindergarten through 12, Davis said in a news conference following the budget address. According to an analysis by the nonprofit think tank Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, the actual number needed to get the state to adequacy in 2027 is $7.35 billion, or about $780 million in total additional funding each year. Menar said he'd ideally like to see that number hit, but acknowledged that the $350 million number was a product of negotiations which led to the 2017 passage of the bill, not an actual avenue to adequacy within the specified time frame. He also said funding less than $350 million could drive Tier 2 districts down to Tier 1. For Byrne and House Republicans, though, the prospect of $150 million that may or may not be realized this year means instability for local schools and the potential of upward property tax pressures. What the governor proposed as this two-step approach does not guarantee fully funded schools, and it will force their budgeting process to make difficult decisions without the certainty of knowing what the state will be sending them, she said. But Menar said 3 straight years of funding increases totaling more than $900 million have schools in a much better place than they were 5 years ago, when state budgeting conversations centered around to what extent K-12 budgets would be prorated each year. He also said the process of district and state budgeting always intertwines to create some uncertainty, and this year is no different. Now we have a few short community news items. Paxton Church plans prayer seminar in March. The First United Methodist Church of Paxton will be having a prayer seminar, Lord, Teach Us to Pray, presented by a team from the Aldersgate Renewal Ministries on March 13th and 14th. The event begins at 7 p.m. on Friday evening and will continue from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday. There is a cost for the workbook. Lunch will be provided on Saturday, and child care is available if needed with prior notice. Team leaders will also be speaking at the church at the 8 and 10:30 a.m. worship services on March 15th. For more information or to register, please contact the church at fumcpaxton@gmail.com or at 217-379-3817. Benefit supper set at area church. Osmond Emanuel Lutheran Church is preparing a benefit soup supper for Declan Lamy. He is the son of Ryan and Sandy Lamy and grandson of John and Deb Lamy and Gilberto and Margarita Noriega. He was born weighing 1 pound, 4 ounces and was in the NICU until New Year's Day. He goes to the hospital 3 times a week, is still on oxygen, has a heart murmur, and will have a hernia surgery soon. A free will offering will help with the hospital bills and expenses from Declan's 5 specialists. Thrivent Financial will provide an action team card to buy supplies for the benefit. The menu for the supper will be chili, potato soup, oyster soup, sandwiches, pie, and drinks. The meal will be served from 4:30 to 7 p.m. March 7th in the Fellowship Hall. a free will offering will be taken. If you are interested in donating and can't attend, please make the check to Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Osmond and mail it to Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 942 Grape Avenue, Fisher, Illinois, 61843. The church is located in the country between Bellflower and Mansfield. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, February 26, 2020. Lorne L. Bain. Lorne L. Bain, 91, of Gibson City, peacefully passed away at 2:08 a.m. Saturday, February 22, 2020, at his home surrounded by his loving family. Funeral services were held Tuesday, February 25th at the American Evangelical Lutheran Church in Gibson City, with Pastor Jim Davis officiating. A private burial will take place in Drummer Township Cemetery. Lawrence Wayne Freedin, and that's spelt F-R-E-D-I-N. Lawrence Wayne Freedin, 67, of Danville, and formerly of Loda, passed away at 1:25 a.m., Friday, February 21, 2020, at Waters of Covington, Covington, Indiana. A private family funeral service will be held at the Bear Family Funeral Service is in Paxton, followed by burial in Pine Ridge Cemetery, Loda. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. We return to the news with a story entitled GCMS Chorus Department Plans Production March 13th and 14th. The GCMS High School Chorus Department will present Frank Lesser and Abe Burrows' How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying at 7 p.m. March 13th and March 14th in the GCMS High School Gymnasium. Reserve tickets will go on sale March 3rd. Call 217-784-4292 for reserved seats. There will be tickets sold at the door. The GCMS production is under the direction of Amanda Brodus, choreography by Ann Spangler, pit band directed by Christy Bruckett and Kyle Rinchen. How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, the book is by Abe Barrows, Jack Weinstock, and Willie Gilbert, music and lyrics by Frank Lesser. It is based upon the book by Shepard Mead and originally presented by Cy Feuer and Ernest H. Martin in association with Frank Productions. How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying is presented through special arrangement with Music Theater International. All authorized performance materials are also supplied by MTI. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and State Representative Thomas Bennett's column. Governor Pritzker delivers his 2020 budget address. On Wednesday, we heard Governor Pritzker's 2020 state budget address, the governor's proposal for next year's state budget. It is important to remember that this speech is just a wish list as the beginning of the process, and it is a process that has many twists and turns. Last year, the final draft, 1,500 pages in all, was not presented to us until just a few hours before it was called for a final vote. I hope we do not repeat that mistake again this year. The governor's budget increases spending by more than $2 billion compared with last year. I'm concerned that these spending increases will cause us to spend money we don't have and make promises that we cannot keep. As the national economic boom continues, Illinois has been reaping the benefits. More people are working and paying taxes, and the state is bringing in more revenue from economic growth. This year, if we work together in a bipartisan fashion, we can balance the budget without using accounting gimmicks or raising taxes. We have to resist the temptation to rely on hypothetical revenues instead of realistic predictions, and we must not allow irresponsible spending to inflate the budget. One specific item I was happy to hear was the governor's request for increased funding for the Department of Children and Family Services to protect abused children. But money alone is not going to be enough to address the well-publicized shortcomings at DCFS, which we have heard about in the past few years. This year, we shouldn't wait until the closing hours of the session to produce a massive budget bill. We should work together throughout the spring to come up with a balanced budget with no tax increases. If both sides are committed, we can get it done. On January 1st, the registration fee for trailers in Illinois went up by $100. This higher fee has added a significant burden onto small businesses and local drivers. Accordingly, I have joined with my colleague, Representative Avery Bourne, and more than 20 other legislators from both parties in sponsoring House Bill 3851, which would repeal the increase. The bill is currently in the House Revenue and Finance Committee, where it is awaiting a hearing. A few years ago, the General Assembly and the public amended the state constitution to create a lockbox for transportation funding. The state constitution now prohibits money collected for transportation from being swept away for other purposes. I co-sponsored this amendment, and I am glad that it has helped make sure that money raised for our new transportation infrastructure improvement plan has actually been spent on transportation. This year, I have joined with several downstate legislators to propose a similar constitutional amendment to protect the fees and other funds collected for processing fire owners' identification, FOID cards. We learned a few months ago that millions of dollars were swept away from these funds to be spent on other projects, something which contributed to the long delays many applicants are now facing when applying for or renewing a FOID card. House Joint Resolution Constitutional Amendments 39 and 40 would prohibit this kind of fund sweep from happening in the future. Both amendments are in the House Rules Committee awaiting action. How much do we owe? At the time of this writing, the state of Illinois owes $7,328,170,996 in unpaid bills to state vendors. 1 year ago, the backlog stood at $8.4 billion. This figure represents the amount of bills submitted to the Office of the Comptroller and still awaiting payment. It does not include debts that can only be estimated, such as our unfunded pension liability, which is subject to a wide range of factors and has been estimated to be more than $137 billion. I am glad to be a member of the state's School Construction Task Force, which has been meeting since the fall. We met again last week to continue the discussion on how to proceed with providing funds for past, current, and future construction needs. The capital infrastructure plan we passed last year contained additional funds for school construction, including money for some school districts who have been waiting for years to get their projects underway. We have some significant challenges ahead, but we are making progress. Our final report is due in a few weeks. This week marked Grain Bin Safety Week in Illinois, with the Illinois Department of Agriculture using the occasion to remind farm workers to exercise property safety techniques in and around grain bins. Crop conditions this year are reminiscent of 2009, when a wet season for grain storage created dangerous conditions around grain bins. According to a national study by Purdue University, there were 59 entrapments and 26 deaths that season. IDOA reminds farmers never to go into a grain bin or storage facility alone and to turn off and secure all unloading equipment before going into a grain bin. More information is available from the Grain Handling and Safety Council at www.grainsafety.org. Did you know? Springfield became Illinois' state capital on February 24, 1837, when the General Assembly voted to move the capital from Vandalia. State Representative Abraham Lincoln and eight other legislators from the Springfield area successfully pushed for the relocation. Because all nine were men of exceptional height, they went down in history as the Long Nine. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the news from Ford County. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.